Hey, what's up, guys? Thank you for listening to Nuclear Medicine Men podcast. Thank you for sticking me in your ear. Thank you very much. I appreciate all the support that you've shown me so far. I really appreciate it. Keep looking at the numbers, and they're going up. So, yeah, thank you very much. So, to today's guest is someone that I'm becoming very, very fond of. He is a guy that is very spiritually awakened. He is into all the same stuff that I'm into, and probably more, to be honest. He is one of the guys that he's a boots on the ground guy. That's my favorite type of people, because, you know, armchair researchers, you know, hands up, you know, I am one to a degree, you know. We tend to, I don't know if we miss a lot, but we do miss something, and that is the physical, you know, the physical experience of doing, you know, going out and actually connecting with the things that we're researching. It's like a lot of people research the pyramids and never go to the pyramids. Like, that's why I try not to have too much of an opinion on the pyramids, because I've never been there. I'd love to go there, but I've never been there, so what the fuck am I going to bring to the table, you know? So yeah, it's sort of like that. But he is a super cool guy. I know I say that all the time, super cool guy, but he genuinely is. And he is not Christianized. He's an American dude, and a lot of Americans, not all of them, but a lot of, you're very Christianized, you know that, I've said that before. And, you know, nothing wrong with that. You know, worship how you want to worship, you know, no skin off my teeth, whatever it is, whatever the expression is. But yeah, he's a cool dude. He's a super cool dude. Go give him a follow. He's Chasing Mound Builders on Instagram, on Facebook, and where else? On YouTube. And on YouTube. Oh, pardon me. Yes, go give him a follow. Go comment, message him, saying you heard him on the Nuclear Medicine Men podcast. That would be sick. And when it comes to some of the other stuff we talked about, obviously we talked about these, you know, these mounds and stuff, and they're super interesting, you know, I'm not going to lie. But when it came to his spiritual beliefs, now we went back and forth for quite a while on, just on Messenger, you know. And yeah, it's the whole Jesus thing. Yeah, I don't know. I don't understand I suppose, pardon me, I don't understand the, what's the word? How do I phrase it? I don't understand the sort of like cultural capture of people's mental idea of Jesus, because we've got this guy, and, you know, he I don't know, it's so strange. I don't know, I don't even know how to explain it. But if you think about Freemasonry, it's, you know, the one of the key tropes is obviously 33, and then you look at how many vertebrae we have in our spine, and including the fused ones, if you would count the ones that are fused individually, it'd be 33. And then you look at Jesus, and you know, there's all these similarities between Horus and all these other gods. We did get into it a little bit, but he died allegedly, crucified at the age of 33. So yeah, it's like, and then when I had Dr. Narka Longo on, he was talking about how Jesus is Jupiter, Zeus is also Jesus. So yeah, for me, I don't have this savior mentality, you know. You know, he's coming back to save us, you know, just sit there, do fuck all, you know, just pray, say that you love him, and he'll come back and, you know, save the world or whatever. Yeah, that's, I don't see it that way. No one's coming to save me, got to save myself. Courtesy of Sam Tripoli, it's his little saying, which I've adopted, but it's true. No one's coming to save you, got to save yourself. I was just listening to Joe Roop, who is coincidentally supposed to be coming on the show today, but he's feeling a bit under the weather, so whether he does or not, I don't know. But he was talking to Rufus Opus, and Rufus Opus is like quite, you know, he's pretty deep into the, you know, ceremonial magic sort of stuff, which I've thought about doing many times, but then my Catholic upbringing shoots me down and says, don't do that, they're all demons, you know, like, you're gonna get possessed, like, all this fucking shit. And that's like, really? Like, I don't think so, to be honest. I don't think so. Like, all these other entities on the other side of the veil, you know, and it goes back to what I say, like, when you watch these, like, YouTube videos, and, you know, there's like a scary video, like a ghost compilation, and then you'll see it's like Burger King foot lettuce, you know, that guy Chills or whatever his name is, he's like, see how the bag moved across the table, you know, this house is demonic. It's like, what, because a fucking bag moved? Like, get fucking grip, Jesus Christ. Again, do you know what I'm saying though? It just doesn't make any, like, it's just everything is so Catholicized and Christianized that everything is demonic. Everything is demonic. It's like, for fuck's sake, come on. Like, we're coming out of the age of Pisces now. Like, we can give it a rest. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, but go and check out, but back to August. Go and check out Chasing Man Builders. We got into a lot of stuff. It's super cool, super, super good conversation. He's actually coming back on this week because he's got some dreams, and I love me some dreams. He's got some dreams about something that has cropped up a lot on the Confessionals podcast with Tony Merkel. So he's going to be coming on and talking about that. So that'll probably be airing in a couple of weeks. But I'll do this as sort of like a part one, and then that one, pardon me, as a part two. Yeah, so we got some really good guests coming on after. I don't know what it is, but like your nose, where your nose meets your throat, that sore. And it's fucking annoying because every time I swallow, it's just like this itchy little pain. And every time I swallow, I'm like, fuck off. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just, oh, so irritating. It doesn't help that I smoke, and I smoke a lot of weed. That doesn't help at all. And then I do the job that I do, you know, all the dust and all the chemicals and the spray and all this fucking bollocks. But yeah, no, it's all good. Fuck it. I'm just whinging. I'm whinging. He said, shut the fuck up and start the show. So yeah, I'm going to do that. I'm going to shut the fuck up and start the show. So yeah, go ahead, go and follow me on all my socials, DM, comment, send me some guest recommendations if you want. Go and, yeah, here's another thing as well. Send me guest recommendations because I love that. But then also recommend me to guests. Say, you know, this fucking lowlife as a show, and he, you know, does all this fucking stupid shit. Go and, you know, he'd probably be interested in having you on the show, or whatever, I don't know. But do what you gotta do. You know, help the show grow, and let me know that you've done it. I know that there's this sort of, like, mentality of, you know, do something, you know, like, the whole, feed the homeless and then shove a camera in the face. I think that's a metaphor, but, you know, tell me that you've done it, because I want to know that you've done it, because I want to thank you. You know, so yeah, go and do that. Give us a rating, 5 stars probably. Other people have, so why can't you? Hey, joking. Yeah, right, goodbye. This intro's coming up on 10 minutes, so it's far too long. So, goodbye. Thank you very much for listening. What?
Yeah. My name is Philip. Chasing Mound Builders is something I started, I don't know, kind of like a boots on the ground type of thing about 4 or 5 months ago, but it really sprang from a larger spiritual awakening I had last year in like December. So yeah, it's a long story, but I have the YouTube channel Chasing Mound Builders, the Instagram, I'm on Facebook obviously, and and TikTok. I'm not on TikTok very much because it's the format is a little strange, but it is a good tool, I guess. I do. I love Crocs, obviously. As you pointed out, I'm big on Crocs. I hike in them, I run in them, everything. So, in fact, I'm doing a 5K at Cahokia next month on the 11th, wearing Crocs. So that'll be fun.
Wow. Yeah, that's going to be either fun or painful, one of the two.
Yeah, well, I mean, I train in Crocs, and it's every morning. I get up at 3 a.m. and I'm on the treadmill or outside if I can be.
Nice, man. So let me ask you, when you say you had a spiritual awakening, was it sort of like a built up thing? Did it build up over time, or was it just a sort of like click and it's there, you've had the awakening?
It wasn't a click. It was not, and there was no instant where I realized. In fact, it was kind of a spiral. Not to get like too deep into the dark of it, but it kind of came from a very suicidal place, depressed place. And actually, this may be a little, you know, I don't know how woo you want to get, but.
No, we want all the woo.
I mean, that's kind of who I am, that I'm embracing right now, is like, which I pushed away for a long time. I grew up very different, you know. I'm a neurodivergent individual, so I had a lot of challenges. And that's all fine, but you know, I started to notice I was living a dissociative life, like a lot of people. And it didn't sit right with me. And I had family problems, mainly because of, you know, being dissociated all the time and spending my time on basically bullshit, you know. It's without going too deep into that side of it, Actually, and part of where the woo comes into play was I started listening to podcasts about that type of subject because I had an experience with sleep paralysis. And it was the only time that I've had it in my life. But it brought up other memories that I had been pushing down for a long time, and just a lot of stuff. So in short, I started learning about the concepts of like hermetic wisdom and alchemy, and you know, then onto sacred geometry, and I've always been a history fan, so you know, it's the kind of thing where it was important to me. And part of that was in movement. You know, part of that awakening was I knew I needed to get moving. So I got out on the trail. You know, at the time I was about 326 pounds. I couldn't move for more than, you know, I could walk maybe an eighth of a mile straight without like stopping and resting. But I was very sedentary and very just a sad sack, really. I mean, so it started with movement. I just felt compelled to move. And the spirituality aspects started to come around slowly as I gained wisdom and started to not waste my time with crap and, Yeah, it just was a slow process. That's a long way to say it was a very slow process where I spiraled several times and, you know, ended up in group therapy and, you know, partially hospitalized and like, because it's, you know, I felt so isolated. And a spiritual awakening, everyone romanticizes it, but it's a lot of isolation.
That's sort of like, not in terms of your personal experience, but the whole it coming gradually is sort of the avenue that I would expect more than just the click, because the click does seem very Hollywood-esque. But in terms of like your struggle and stuff like that, obviously I don't expect you to get, you know, deep into the gritty details or anything like that, but because, you know, sometimes it's good to acknowledge, you know, your past and your pain, you know, and your struggle, but you don't want to dwell in it. Do you know what I mean?
I don't live there anymore.
Yeah, 100%, bruv. You know, just got to keep moving forward and that's it. Like, never look, you can sort of like glance back or whatever, but you got to keep your eyes on the road, bro, you know? And when it comes to like the other type of spiritual awakening, the click, I have. And the reason I asked you is because I was reminded today that I worked on a site with this guy, because I'm in construction. I worked on a site with a plumber and he had these fucking crazy eyes. Like you know, they say like the eyes are the windows to the soul. You know what I'm saying? And this guy, you could see him a mile away because he had like this really, like really wide eyes. Super nice guy. And he told me that he went to Ibiza in 2016 or something like that. I can't remember when, but he went to sleep, didn't take psychoactive drugs, nothing like that. Woke up in a cold sweat in the middle of the night and just literally had this massive download, and like he was just awakened from that point. And that's so interesting. And it's crazy like the difference between sort of like what some people will go through as opposed to others. And like when it comes to the longer path that like yourself went through, like I went through and stuff like that, it's more, I don't know if it's obviously because I haven't experienced the other path, but it's for me, like it seems a lot more like solid, more concrete, because you've built up that foundation, you know, from the struggle, because struggle ultimately creates strength. And I know it's hard to say that, like you can't say to a mother that's just lost their child that, you know, this struggle is going to make you strong. You know, you can't say that shit.
It's controversial.
She'll rip your face off. but super interesting, man. So in terms of like the spiritual aspect, like, oh no, actually fuck that shit, I just remembered you said you had sleep paralysis, and that, you know, that's come up four times with four different guests on my show. It's so weird. It's so much more prevalent than people think it is. Did you see anything at all, or was it just the paralysis?
Oh yeah. And this is why it became relevant for me, because as far as like bringing up other memories, because I had seen shadow people my entire life, and I'd become so used to it that it was a non-issue. And I kind of like grew up Catholic in a way. I went with my grandmother when she made me, when we visited, and that was about it. And my mom, you know, claimed to be Catholic, and that's really the extent of it. But other than that, I never dealt with it from a religious perspective. So to me, it was just something that just was. And I learned at a young age to not talk about it, because I, you know, to be ridiculed is not something anyone wants. So, and when I was already weird anyway, so, you know, my brain worked a lot differently. And, I don't know how far back you want to go, but there's a lot of them. I mean, my first encounter with an otherworldly, what I don't know what you would call it, was at 4 years old.
Wow.
But back to the sleep paralysis, this was, this would have been 2019. I actually noticed it happening in a dream. I was, whatever this entity was, I was onto it, because in the dream, I went to pick up my kids from a daycare, and there was this, there's nobody in the daycare. It's not a daycare I've ever seen in my life, by the way. And there was, this room was nothing but like, there was windows everywhere. It looked very picturesque, and it was kind of stormy outside. And there was a woman behind a desk, and, you know, she was an attractive woman, you know, and she kind of looked up and spoke to me, and immediately I felt weird. I'm like, yeah, you know, where's my boys? And it's like she couldn't hear me or was ignoring me, and just kind of like walked over to me with a very, like, there was this, it was a lot of sexual tension, and just kind of like essentially threw herself on me. And I just am like pushing away, like, listen, I'm married, and, like, you know, this is a, this is inappropriate, or, you know, it just feels weird. And plus that alarm bell started going off on my head. I'm like, this is not normal. So immediately I know I'm dreaming, which I kind of knew anyway, because it was so vivid. And I noticed all the windows and the, you know, the environment. And I had gotten pretty good at knowing when I was dreaming.
Nice.
So as soon as I realized, and I started to call this thing out for what it was, my eyes snapped open, but that was the only part of me that could move. So, how I'm positioned on my bed, I'm at the edge because my wife is all over the place on the, on my left. And my right shoulder is somewhat hanging off of the edge. So I'm staring directly up. Obviously I'm on my back, and I can't move my head left or right, but in my peripheral vision, when I look to my right, I can see the outline of a body laying next to me. I can also see the outline of my wife on the left, but on the right, I can see this thing like lying horizontally alongside me, and both of its arms are around my right arm, like in an embrace, and it is, I can actually feel its breath on my ear. And it's almost like it was speaking something. I don't know. And I, it was startling, but I wouldn't even say I was really scared. I was just like, I was more upset that I couldn't move, for sure. And that was startling, but I didn't get a sense of necessarily evil. It was just a, and I know, and I say that because I know a lot of people do. It's, I've seldom heard a story where someone wasn't like, you know, this thing is obviously evil. And I just didn't get that. To me, it was just like, someone that really wanted my attention, and I wasn't being strangled. I wasn't being, there was no like sitting on my chest or anything like that. It was just stretched out horizontally beside me. But that's the weird thing, is that there was nothing but air right there, buddy. Like, this thing had to have been levitating. And when I looked, the very few details I could figure out about it was that it was clearly female, and or the shape, the, what little I could see of the shape, and it was either very badly burned or had a reptilian skin and very dark in color. So then I started to get a little more concerned. Like, as I started to pick up these details, I'm thinking, what the fuck is going on here? So, I can't move. I'm trying to signal my wife with my eyeballs, which is impossible. Eventually I start to get where I can move my left fingers a little bit, and I'm like desperately trying to grasp onto something and shake the bed or something. And eventually I just was able to pop up. And when I did pop up, I could feel the energy of this thing sort of leave the room three-dimensionally, but remain in another, I don't really know how to explain this. It wasn't gone, but it three-dimensionally, it was gone. you wouldn't have seen it.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
100%. Yeah. I think that that is A, horrifying. It says to me that it's obviously it's something to do with sleep, obviously. But this is the question is, what is the dream, like our dreams? So I think for you, like personally, like I've had sleep paralysis once, I've never seen anything, but I'm that I just thought I was gonna die, and I'd imagine you felt the same. But having this next to you, like my first thought was when you said female, it was either I can't remember what one it was, incubus or succubus, one of them.
It's succubus, yeah,
in the dream too. Like that's other than you know, explicit actually getting on top of you and you know, doing the thing. That is pretty sort of like it's got the hallmarks of a succubus, you know. But
yeah, there was no doubt in my mind that that's where that was headed. Like it was as plain as day. So I was kind of like, you know, this is weird. Women don't do this. Like, so that, you know, flag.
Yeah.
And then secondly, like, it's not what I was there for. And I realized that I was dreaming, which I had done before. So it was just like, I think that's why I wasn't as scared when I woke up and saw what I saw, because A, I have a history of encountering things that should scare me. But B, it was eased into because I realized I was in the dream. I was like, wait, this is all wrong. So it wasn't as jarring. You know what I mean?
100%. I do want to go back before we forget to one thing that you said, and you sort of brushed over it, and how dare you, the the entity at 4 years old. What?
Yes.
Go into that a little bit, because that sounds fascinating.
Well, actually, I already recorded a podcast about this. It is. I won't shout it out on here. I don't want to blow up nobody's spot. But
oh, bro, yeah, no, mate. I shout out so many podcasts.
It's actually the Paranormal Portal, and it's when I spoke with the host, awesome dude. And since I shouted him out, everybody should check him out too. His podcast is awesome as well. Yeah, it's in talking back and forth with the host, you know, that memory came back up when the sleep paralysis happened. And that was very emotional for me. And when I recorded the podcast, I still had not really gone through my spiritual awakening. And I had a very weird understanding of what had happened. And I have a little bit of a different understanding now. And we had come to the agreement that it, for some reason, we used the word vampire.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that with a level of skepticism because I'm not, you know, I try to have that anyway in every instance. But I don't know what else you would call it. There were a lot of hallmarks where, just to, you know, begin the story, what happened was, we lived in a trailer in central Illinois, and, I played a game. Basically, we had this little route that I would run around the living room to the kitchen, to the dining room, and my mom would chase me and everything. And, it usually started with me climbing up on the sink. She didn't want me on the sink, looking out the back window. I don't know why I always looked out the back window, but I did. Actually, I think now it was kind of like a survival thing for me. I was dealing with some people that were not at the time that were kind of monsters themselves. And that led me to the realization that I may have actually conjured this thing, almost like a form of protection. I don't know. Maybe I thought like, you know, I needed a monster to to help me battle a monster, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So anyway, I notice as I'm sitting on the sink one day, it's kind of like dusk. It's getting pretty dark, which means it's almost time to go to bed. And that's a bad time for me anyway at that stage. I was mainly a happy kid, but I was going through so many things that I internalized it all. But as I'm looking out the back window, I see the figure of a person standing there in the tree line. It's maybe, I want to say, between 150, 175 yards behind the house. There's a tree line. So, and most of what I can see are like red eyes. And that's not typical, right? You know, because at that point, that would alarm anybody. But and this is another experience where I just wasn't alarmed, and maybe that set the tone. I always thought that, like, the fact that I could see things that I could see, and these weird habits that I have and stuff like that, and I always attributed it kind of to this encounter, that maybe it left like an imprint or something. I don't know, but I remember looking over to the left to where the hallway was, and I was about to call for my mom because that was disturbing in a way. Not like where I was scared, but just like, hey, you know, who is this? And as I turned back, it may have been, you know, I was 4 years old, so the time frame is wonky, but it may have been a couple seconds. When I look back, this thing is right against the window. Yeah. And it's indescribable because it was, so the image I saw was clearly a man, an African-American man. Who was more like a, you know, you would say a light skin, with red, again, the red eyes were very visible. And he would have been about, I don't know, 5'8". And I say this because I'm judging it based on what I saw later. He had to have been, you know, reasonably short, not very tall, about not around the same height I am now. But he was also portly. He was also kind of like what you would consider overweight. So, you know, thinking back on it, like, that's for someone to, you know, to move that quickly at that size wouldn't have been very feasible either. But anyway, I didn't feel threatened, and I'm just kind of looking at this thing, and he's, his head is kind of moving back and forth, almost in like the way a cobra does, you know, how they do like in the cartoons, like analyzing and just kind of like looking into my soul, basically. And I don't understand what's going on, but I go to reach for the window. I find myself reaching for the window, like the latch.
Oh shit. To open it.
Yes. And at that point, I hear my mom's voice because I called for her and she's approaching. And I look over for briefly to see her. I was like, I was so innocent, I guess. I was just like, look at this, you know, I thought of him as a new friend, basically. Like, you know, look at this guy. I'm going to let him in, basically. And as I look back over, all I see is a blur of movement to a fence that sat next to the adjacent property, and the adjacent property was empty. We were the only ones around for a while, but the adjacent property had like a barn on it or something. And there was a fence line there. And I saw this thing stop at the fence, the blur, and launch itself only using one hand to grab the top of this very tall fence. And that's how I'm guessing he must have been about 5'7", 5'8". Not something you would expect an overweight gentleman who appeared to be around, I don't know, 40 years old, maybe. to be able to do. And especially the movement. It was really the movement that was jarring, because it was like, this was fast. When I say fast, I mean like, and that's part of why I came to the conclusion that that's what it must have been, because I remember watching the film 30 Days of Night. I don't know if you remember that one.
Yeah.
If I had to describe what he was like, it would have been that.
That sounds horrifying.
Well, I guess it kind of does, but again, I didn't experience any terror. And I, you know, obviously there was less violence, you know, that movie conjures up a lot of images of violence, but there was no violence. So I didn't have any context for what his intentions might've been. So,
what was the look on his face? Did he have like an anger, peaceful, like a look? Really?
Yeah. Weird. It was bizarre, because, as I look back on it, I don't know if that was his intention to like lure me out or, you know, get a way in, you know. Yeah. I don't know. You know, was he a predator? When I recorded this the first time, I thought, you know, I was prey. But I have a different perspective now. And that comes from having tried to, I actually, against people's advice, tried to remote view this thing at one point. And I'm not saying I'm proficient at remote viewing. I don't try very often. I'm not even really good at it at all. But I did feel like I established a connection. And there's very little information was exchanged, but it was like a very much annoyed to hear from you type of thing, you know, almost like you intruded into my space. And which is the irony is like he intruded, like, I mean,
yeah,
whatever that thing was. I wouldn't even be curious if it weren't for this thing coming to me. So,
yeah.
But that was that. And I got the impression that, basically, there's one bit of dialogue that I remember from that kind of download. It wasn't necessarily a download, maybe a bad word to use, but I'm sorry, someone's running above me.
That's right.
You probably heard the pounding footsteps.
My kids are the same.
Yeah, they, so this, the dialogue that kind of like, it was more of an impression, was I asked, you know, what are you? Like were you what I'm thinking you are? And the answer that I got was something along the lines of, if that's the extent of what your human words can produce, then that's fine.
Jeez.
And there wasn't much after that. It was very brief. And yeah, it was. And when I originally wrote to, you know, to Brent over there at the show, I didn't use the V word at all. I thought of it, you know, that was my initial thought, but I didn't want to use it because I didn't want to lead him anywhere. I did that on purpose because I was like, certainly I'm going to sound crazy if I say that. So that was that. And, yeah, I don't really know what to make of that, but I always attributed all the weirdness in my life to that initial meeting. You know, the shadow people and, you know, my weird, I have this weird compulsion where I read and speak in reverse, which is weird. A fun thing to do. Yeah, it's a fun party trick to do for people. But it's actually a point of real frustration for me, because I have this compulsion. I'll be reading a book And in the middle of a chapter, I'll just feel compelled to read in reverse to the beginning and read again. So it's actually really frustrating.
Yeah, sounds it.
Yeah, it's just there's a bunch of stuff, and I attributed it all to kind of that beginning. And maybe it's just the fact that I am accustomed to strangeness. I don't know if that meeting or that encounter kind of like it's justified to put everything on that, but you know, that's I suppressed a lot of that. I pushed all that down for a long time, and I would even see shadow people from time to time during my dissociative phase. And it wouldn't register, because I had shunned everything spiritual. I had shunned everything that wasn't, I was a, you know, an atheist materialist. I was forcing myself to be, I was completely rejecting things that I knew were there because it was traumatic for me in a way. I lost my dad when I was 7. So, you know, a lot of that was traumatic. And there was some spiritual component to that that I won't go into, but I felt, you know, somewhat to blame for that. And it's just something that I shoved down and shoved away for a long time. So when that sleep paralysis event happened, that's why I say this is a very long roundabout way to like get into why I awakened.
Yeah.
And I realize that's a very like convoluted, you know, I don't know if that's the right word, just kind of like a, but it's important for context, because the awakening caught me off guard, but it kind of made sense after a while. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. When it comes to like the sleep paralysis, this is a two-part question. Do you still get it now? And two, do you think in any way, and I know this is super vague, and answer it, you know, to the best of your ability if you want to, but the sort of the cultures say that your channel focuses on, so like the Hope Wells and, you know, all these sort of like all these proper old cultures in the Americas and everywhere, pretty much, like the Middle East, China, and all this stuff, they must have known also about the shadow people. They must have, because if it's happening to us now, it must have been happening to them at some point. And the thing that I always think is, and it's the same with the sort of like, sort of kind of related, but I always think when it comes to these super old cultures is, you know, if Jesus is meant to be this, you know, savior, which obviously that's just Christian and Catholic perspective, but surely they would have known about some Jesus, you know, and you could say, yeah, well, it's Horus and, you know, Egyptian and things like that. But let's just getting back to actually the question I started with is, do you see these now? And do you think that they have persisted over history, do you think?
No, yeah. I mean, they don't happen now. I have after that, I've never had the paralysis, but I have after that been able to sense when things are around more. And not necessarily visually, but just here. In fact, I've been like kind of in twilight mode, kind of about to fall asleep, and noticed it trying to like penetrate the dream again, if that makes sense.
Mm.
And it's kind of, I laugh about it. And maybe this is inappropriate to do, but I do. That's who I am. I laugh about it because it's almost like a gotcha moment. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I caught you trying to creep in there. It's not going to happen. Get out of here. Like, and I know that's so weird to say to make light of a situation like that, but that's how I deal with things. And as far as the other part of the question, I don't necessarily look at things from an Abrahamic perspective or anything. I'm more into the and as we get into the mounds, you'll hear kind of my theories on that. The older ancient civilization, you know, way older than we can even imagine, being more of a truth, if that makes sense. So I do believe that using the name of Jesus or Yeshua or whatever you want to call him, I think you could equally use Hermes if you wanted to, or Thoth. But the reason I think that it works is because of your will. Mm. I think that claiming your space is important, you know, and that you are only susceptible to attack if you believe you are. That's my sincere belief. However, I could be wrong. I don't know what everyone else's experience is. So, but from my experience, your will is enough.
Yeah,
you know, use the name Jesus for sure. Like, in fact, I've thought about it. I've had just as like a relic from my upbringing, you know, thinking of Jesus in times like that. And but I don't, if that's helpful to someone, I'd say absolutely. But to me, it's just something I don't feel like I've needed.
It does make sense in a way to say, because like, if you think about it from sort of like a collective standpoint, is like most people, if they're being, say, attacked, not attacked, but like, you know, harassed by some sort of demon or whatever it is, you know, the first thing they are going to think of, even if they're not religious, is like, oh, Jesus, no, please save me. You know, even if they're not religious, you know, it'll be like, fuck, you know, I need to fucking repent or whatever. So I don't, you know, it could be the case, because in that moment, you're probably not thinking, you know, oh, please, horror, save me. But maybe if you did say, do you know what I mean? If you did say that, maybe it would have the same effect just because of the intent. It's like egregore, you know, it's that intent that you're putting out there that's warding these, you know, things off. Because
absolutely, it's energy.
Yeah, I do subscribe, sort of. Well, I go back and forth. But do you know Billy Carson, the aerospace guy? He's quite big in the sort of podcast circuit and, you know, conspiracy community and stuff. He has this sort of like, and you'll know what I'm talking about. And I don't know if I'll get your thoughts on that after, and then we'll get to the mounds. His thoughts are, we are the gods. It's in us. Sure. What were your thoughts on that?
Yeah. I won't argue with Billy Carson. It's funny you mentioned that, a synchronicity, because I watched a video of his not an hour before I sat down here.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was, and I really, he was talking about going to Egypt. I was like, man, I wish I could go to Egypt with him. But yeah, I think that he's spot on a lot of things. I mean, you know, our texts, as far as Abrahamic religions and Hindu religions and all of these things, are essentially copies of ancient tablets that are at this point well known. There's no excuse for people not to know them, in my opinion, except for just that you're not interested. And that's fine. That's a personal decision for people, and I don't begrudge anybody that. But I will say, you know, it's about being the gods. I don't know. I know that we have creative license here, you know, some sort of autonomy. You know, when people like Joe Dispenza tell you that your thoughts can create reality, I fully believe that. Because and like you said, you go back and forth, and I don't. And the reason I don't go back and forth on, I'm all in on stuff like that, is because I have alchemized mentally in so many ways, including, you know, running the 5K, for example, I was 100 pounds heavier this time last year. And people would say, you know, that's diet and exercise. And it's some of that, yes, but it's more about, I didn't put a question on taking care of myself. I didn't put a question mark on it anymore. And my focus was there. And I began meditating, and this whole experience of awakening started to like really ramp up to where I was having sleep issues. And, as far as like waking up in the middle of the night and going to run and, you know, just a wild amount of stuff, man. And, learning about alchemy and how to focus on connecting your heart with your mind. You know, that's why I say if you don't own a copy of The Alchemist by Paulo Coelho, you're messing up, because that's even if you don't believe in it from the woo perspective, from a practical perspective, the lessons that you can glean from that literature are boundless.
Yeah, that's. Could you send me that in a link after? Because I don't have that book, and it sounds very, very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's fairly famous. You know, people like Oprah and Kobe Bryant were like, "Yeah, this is our favorite book," and I'll send it to you. My copy is all marked up with notations, and I went psychopath on it, so I. Nice. You know, I really study this stuff. In fact, I fully believe that cognitive behavioral therapy is applied alchemy. I told my therapist, I said, "You're an alchemist," and I said it so many times that eventually she looked it up and was like, "You know what? You're kind of right." I said, "I know I am."
<That's>, yeah.
You know, you can't see me right now because the video's not on, but on my wall back here, I have cognitive behavioral therapy literature plastered everywhere because I've made it my life. And so yeah, that's important. You know, there's a thread that connects everything in this realm, and man, you know, when you read the Kabbalion and they say the all is mind, that wasn't a joke, that wasn't, you know, a metaphor, that was the universe is mental, I think. And that's very controversial, because that comes with a lot of weight of like, are you saying that I choose to be this way? And it's, you kind of have to tell them, yeah, you know, yeah, you do. That was hard for me to come to terms with too.
Yeah. Because if you think about it in the sense of, see, in this culture, and I'm glad you brought that out, because it reminded me, in this sort of like culture, and this is a great example of it, I seen on, is either on TikTok or Instagram a few months ago, they were taking, you know, the piss out of manifestation. And there was a guy, glasses on, ponytail, and he was saying, "I'm going to get out of paying this parking ticket with manifestation." And he had his, like, the classic, he had his hands, his fingers on his temple, you know, squinting, you know, really trying to force out a manifestation, whatever that means. But if you think about it in the sense of like me, for example, like say me or you, say like say this podcast that you're on right now, for example, like manifesting isn't, you know, something that you just think up and it, you know, it appears. It's the manifestation of, you know, your thoughts going into applying your thoughts and, you know, marrying it with the practical, you know, the action that you have to put in. And then it's like I see manifestation as like a marriage of like your mental strength that you would have to put in, you know, the mental, I can't think of my words today, you know.
What you're talking about is like mindfulness.
Yeah, just like actually being willing to do it, you know, because there's the thing, like people talk about dreams and they're like, oh yeah, you dream big, you know, you can dream all you want, you know, keep dreaming and all this shit. And it don't mean fuck all unless you actually put some action in, you know, because you could have the same dream for about 10 years and not have any results whatsoever because you never took the first step to achieving that dream. You just kept dreaming about that dream. Fuck dreaming right. about the dream. That's all well and good. Keep that in the back of your head as like a poster, you know, that you can look on, like a to-do list, you know. And that's how I see, you know, life. It's just like you just got to keep going. Like I don't overthink stuff too much. Like I don't think, you know, what if I do this and what if it fails? I'm just like, fuck this. If it fails, it fails. Fuck it. At least I said I did it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, heck yeah. Because that's a good way to be. Because when you eliminate the fear, you know, like they say, doubt has killed more dreams than failure ever will. I mean, doubting, it's taking that leap that matters. I like what you said, and there's two points to touch on, and that is that the irony of that video you're talking about, which is those are hilarious, by the way, and I love watching them. But the irony of it is that it's bringing attention to the concept of the law of attraction and stuff like that. So more people end up digging into it a little bit, even if it's a very, very small percentage. And secondly, it points out, like you said, you brought it up, that gaping hole, and like it's not just setting your intention. You have to set your intention, but then you also have to be mindful of your actions and make sure they're in alignment with that intention. So, and that's, again, cognitive behavioral therapy will teach you that, which I think every, you know, we have an epidemic that's worldwide where men are taking their own life, and that's very important to me, at being someone who's been there and suffered with it for a lot of years. And, you know, it's important for people to get help. And if it's CBT, that's great. If you want to dive into alchemy and learn to master your thoughts and do it that way, people like, you know, Joe Dispenza will help you do that. Or, you know, Robert Edward Grant or somebody like that can, you know, enough diving on the subject will lead you to a path that works for you. But you're right. It does take a lot more than just setting that intention, for sure.
Yeah, 100%. And so now, you know, we've touched on quite a lot of stuff, to be fair, but we haven't touched on your YouTube channel, Chasing the Mound Builders, which is someone listening to this, they're like, is he actually going to get to the mounds? So you are pretty fresh off an adventure yourself. You went to Ohio, you went to Newark. Where else did you go? I've been watching your videos all day to prepare, and I completely forgot. Where else did you go? Ohio.
Well, first of all, I'm sorry that you had to see that much of me. But no, we went to, so I went to, my family was set to vacation in Gatlinburg. And so I had a few days off before that was going to happen. So I did a trip through Ohio. I started with Miamisburg, which is a spot where they allegedly found, there's like some giant activity, you know, giant bones that were collected. I went down to a place, a Hopewell. So that was, Miamisburg is in Edina Mound officially. But I went to a Hopewell site called Fort Hill, which is very rural. It's kind of hard to get to. But the energy there is nuts. I was being stalked through the woods by something. I have no idea what. Again, I wasn't really that worried. I maybe should have been, but it's the kind of thing that, like, what am I going to do? Like, to be scared and like try to run out of there is not going to be helpful. So, and I'm not going to not investigate and explore these mounds because I have a calling for it. So that's going to happen no matter what I encounter out there. And to be fair, I haven't had a lot of encounters at mound sites. That's one of like two, really, you know, maybe three where I've had like something weird happen. But Fort Hill was amazing, by the way. Really good hiking area. There's a gorge trail you can get on. And it's very old, and they actually didn't just use earth. There's a lot of rock work there too. So, you know, I had to actually use my hands at one point to get up to where these are at. So it's only a 2 mile trail for the Fort Hill trail. But there's a point where the elevation is pretty steep, and to imagine them carrying so many rocks up there is kind of impressive in itself. And then, I went to Newark. Newark was amazing. And, you know, I was sick as a dog this whole time, by the way. I had this terrible bug. And I pull up to Newark and I walk out and I do like a preliminary walk around. And I get in my car and I use divination cards, oracle cards. And I decide, you know, I'm going to pull a card and I'm going to see what it says. And, you know, it says Vision Quest. And I'm like, well, shit. I'm not going to argue with the universe. So, and maybe this is inappropriate. You can edit this out if you want to, but I'm big on psychedelics. So, I had taken a very low dose, and a lot of people would consider it a microdose. Some people consider it a lot heavier than that. It's something that like I wanted to do to honor that card pull, and it turned out being very helpful. I visited a spot called Flint Ridge about 14 miles away after seeing all the geometric mounds, and kind of like meditating for a while and getting the energy of the area. Cause that'll tell you more about this stuff than like a book ever will, or even my videos. They won't tell you anything like being there and removing your lenses of your culture and your cognitive biases and just absorb it, you know, and try to imagine what would have happened. And in doing that, actually at Flint Ridge, it just occurred to me, you know, this is clearly some sort of airport.
Oh, airport.
You know, like there's an eagle effigy in the middle of the circular mound. You know, obviously those eagles fly. To tie back into like Billy Carson's theories that you brought up earlier, you know, Atlanteans were known to have used crystals for various reasons. And that Flint Ridge is a massive quartz concentration. I mean, if you walk around there, there's quartz rocks, you know, bigger than your car, just hanging out. So, you know, and they range in size. They're of all sizes. It's everywhere. And that chert that's there, the flint that's there is like, it was coveted everywhere because of it. It has unique physical properties and mostly the color. But yeah, I mean, it just hit me. It just kind of hit me, along with a couple other revelations. I can tell you about those sometime when we're, you know, not in the podcast. But I had a couple other revelations, and that was but that hit me, and I was like, this is clearly like a mining operation. You know, there's even between the geometric mound sites are like formations. There are these causeways that. It just became obvious to me. It was a vision. The card said, you know, Vision Quest. And I was like, well, I'm not, you know, are we doing this or are we not? So I did my thing and, And I started thinking Plato, when he talks about Atlantis, and you know, his connection, you know, the Greek guy. And as, you know, he's such a brilliant person. And I have never finished actually Critias, but just the, there was a lot of synchronicity. And even in just in like, for example, passing Athens on my way south, I was just, I just kind of chuckled to myself. And it did, there just was a lot of things happening at the same time. And it made it kind of obvious to me what was going on. It re-solidified my belief that if you want to call them ETs, because I guess Atlanteans technically would be, that's fine. But I think they were here. I think, I believe these guys when they say that they built a system in Egypt and then they tried to do it everywhere else and they lost technology as they went on. And, you know, these ancestors, these tribes that are over here, I think that they really are remnants of Atlantis and Lemuria and things like that. And I don't mind being that guy. I know they demonize people like Graham Hancock and say a lot of nasty things about him for, you know, but it's like, it's not like these cultures are incapable of building this stuff. It's just that even in their own stories, they say they didn't. You know, when the Spanish came upon some of these cultures and they asked them who built the mounds, they it was kind of a shoulder shrug, like,
yeah.
And why wouldn't you listen to their lore? Why wouldn't you listen to their stories? These are people that for a very long time did not have writing, and storytelling was not a joke to them. It was not something that they played around with. It was, so they were very serious about storytelling. So to me, it dishonors them to not pay attention to their stories. You know what I mean? And, you know, the work that the guys that we've mentioned already have done to prove that the official story is, there's, if not all the way crap, there is some, definitely some fuckery to it. And I don't want to disparage anybody who works really hard at any of these sites and classically trained archaeologists, and because I want to be upfront, I am not that. I'm not an archaeologist. I'm not a geologist. I'm not a historian. I'm not a professional anything. But I love to explore, and that is, and I love history, and I love to learn and perceive and focus my energy on things that are helpful, you know, and I was called to it, and I can't tell you what called me to it. It hit me nearly like a lightning bolt, on a hike at the site here in my city, actually, that I had to do this. And I became obsessed with a figure that the Mississippians referred to as Red Horn. And maybe that's who called to me. I don't know. He's also known as the Falcon Warrior in the Southeastern ceremonial complex of like the Mississippian era, which would have been like the Middle Woodland period, around like 900-ish AD, if that's the way you want to say it. I became obsessed with the story because the story is awesome. They also called him he who wears human faces on his ears, because in the story, yeah, his ears would actually mock people, like his enemies. They had like intelligences of their own, and you know, he was known as the Falcon Warrior. Maybe that was the same figure. It's hard to say because this is all artwork on pottery. So, and copper and stuff like that. It's something that's very hard to, and again, I'm not an archaeologist. I don't know artifacts like a lot of people do. I really don't. My specialty is in going to these places, using my senses, to kind of put things together. I need to really catch up on the research game. I really need to, you know. my research is not like a lot of people. I'm not an author, but I do read a lot of them. I have this book in front of me. It's by Charles Hudson, Knights of Spain, Warriors of the Sun. And it's the best, one of the best books I've ever read.
Really?
And yeah, and there's not a lot of woo to it. It's mainly just about the Spanish. It will paint an entirely different picture of what you imagine colonization looked like in this area. So it was very much more nuanced than people realize. So I do get into that side of it, just the purely historical side of it. And one of my favorite books also is one called Ancient Mound Sites, or Mound Sites of the Ancient South, Guide to the Mississippian Chiefdoms. Eric Bown. I actually had a brief conversation with him, and it really made my day, because that his book is just, if you, especially if you're looking for a visual, like just an encyclopedia of like the Mississippian world, that book is especially good. But yeah, nice. His Charles Hudson was kind of a mentor to him. He wrote the foreword on that book, Knights of Spain, Warriors of the Sun. It's dope. I have my notes here in front of me where he does get into some of the strangeness of it, where they talk about, you know, so there was a character called Chicory, and they named him Francisco. Of course, they gave him a new name, was taken mm-hmm. as a slave, and he was known to be large. This person, let me see here what his name would have been. I can't find it, the Spanish guy, but he took him back to Spain to tell Peter Martyr about, who would end up writing a book about it, about his race. And this person, Francisco, was very large. They were called, when that group of them got to Cuba, they were referring to them as giants. And most of them died, probably from disease. And some of them escaped because they lured them in, you know, being friendly, and then enslaved them. So when they got to Hispaniola, or what was modern day Cuba, it just was really, is kind of dirty what happened. But, you know, he spoke of a leader called Dasha, who was supposedly a lot larger than those people. And it's like, well, damn, that these are giant, or what the Spanish consider giants. How large is Dasha? Mm. But he told stories of, you know, these beings that had tails that only ate raw fish, and their fingers were as wide as they were long. I want to be clear, you know, Charles Hudson doesn't give credence necessarily to those. That's just like a story of that's in the account from the primary sources. So he doesn't take an opinion one way or the other. But I just think it's fun to read that stuff. You know, it's, you know, that's important, you know, I think, and to add to context, you know?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, that's when it comes to like, here's what I've always thought when it comes to the giants, because we hear stuff like the Nephilim, for example. A lot of, you know, Abrahamic people will say, we'll talk about the Nephilim. And I mean, even really, like people like me, that are not really religious, but I still have this sort of like, I still use the word regularly. But
because it checks the box, right?
Yeah, 100%. And
people know right away what you're talking about.
Yeah. And there's a guy I interviewed a little while ago, Adam Stokes. He's a Mormon, and he has a different take on it. He believes that it's something. So he believes that the translation is not fallen angel, it's fallen empire. And what happened with, you know, these giants coming down and mating with the women wasn't you know, they fell from the sky for some biblical event. It was, you know, their empire fell and they, you know, they pillaged or whatever. In, you know, you'd have to check his work out because I'm paraphrasing it terribly. But but in terms
please
of,
send me a link to that if you can find his work. Please send me a link. I'd like to check that out.
Yeah, 100%. He's super fat. He's really nice guy as well. And when it comes to, so this is just, I know this is sort of like a superficial thing, but when it we always hear about them having red hair. That's constantly, that's something that weaves throughout pretty much all of the sort of giant, you know, sightings or whatever, and the Nephilim reports and stuff like that. Even like, who was it in Lovelock Cave? The red-headed giants that were, they burned them out in the cave and they were all red-headed. And the Kandahar giant, red-headed.
Yeah.
I wonder.
What's a quaddle?
Yeah. I wonder if the modern day red-headed human isn't some form of genetic throwback to that genetic modification, because I've heard stories, now I don't know how true these are, of certain redheaded people. Now I don't know if all of them have this, I don't know if all of them have it and they don't even know that they have it, but like the ability to heal certain things like warts, for example. Super strange. That's what I always wonder. I'm like, red hair, like, is, I mean, red hair is pretty specific, you know?
It shows up a lot, doesn't it?
So I wonder if, like, I wonder if that's got anything also to do with the Rh negative blood. Maybe the Atlanteans are the Nephilim. Maybe, I don't know. So,
yes.
There's so many avenues you could go down, you know?
Yeah, if you look at the, not to keep bringing his name back up, but like Billy Carson's work, he talks about how the empire fell in a way. You know, Thoth was not supposedly like his family, his brethren. You know, and I would argue that everyone alive today has some sort of lineage to the Atlanteans. I would argue that it's just as many, if not more, that have Neanderthal DNA. So because, you know, if you subscribe to that story or whatever variation of it you subscribe to, if you do, there was genetic tampering either way. In any way that they spin the story, there was genetic tampering. And there's just so many, there starts to be so many synchronicities of like all these religious stories hearkening back to that, the tablets. And it's just becoming so clear. It's, I don't know how one really does the mental gymnastics to get around it at this point. I mean, even if they're not Atlanteans, it was an advanced civilization of some sort. So, and the work that's being done to prove that these theories of how old civilization is, it's like the writing is on the wall. I mean, if people cannot look at it if they want to, but that's, you know, a personal choice. And that, you know, as far as like the giants go, I think maybe the genetic tampering had something to do with that. I mean, you know, you talk about the red hair and I spoke of Redhorn earlier, and that's why they call him that, is because he had red hair and he was a protector of humanity. Right. So he, in his story, he actually fought giants to protect humans.
Oh shit.
And not only that, he was a player. He had a human wife and a giant wife, and he was having babies with these giants too. So
mad about town.
Yeah, I'm not gonna hate on him. He was, Redhorn was busy, but you know, that's his business. But I really like his story, and that, it has a lot of parallels to kind of what you brought up about the red hair and the disbursement of it. Cause you talked about like the caves where, you know, out west, and that would have been where, you know, they, you know, ancient natives in that area talked about Quetzalcoatl coming and being the knowledge bringer. This is the same way, ancient Egypt was brought knowledge by Thoth. I mean, there's too many parallels to even really, if you don't subscribe to that specifically, that, you know, it has to be some variation of that, or at least some sort of like remnant of that. I mean, I find it hard to believe that it's any other way. And that doesn't speak to even the religious aspects of it, does it? Because it's like, that's just like a practical thing. When it talks about like Atlanteans creating things, that doesn't mean you have to reject an Abrahamic religion. Look at Edgar Cayce. I mean, he was a Christian man.
Yeah, you know, he was like, when I know everyone's sort of like, everyone that's not in this sphere, whenever Atlantis is sort of brought up, you know, the ones that are really far outside, you know, the masses, they'll say, yeah, it was just a myth or whatever. And then other people will say, that's something to do with Plato. And then you get to people like, sort of like us, that are more, you know, aware. And we're like, motherfucker, that's Edgar Cayce all day long. This guy, Sleeping Prophet, was no fucking joke. Like,
no, dude, yeah.
He was crazy. Yeah. This is something that super interests me, and I just keep asking these questions, and I don't see a connection being made, but I don't see the lack of evidence to suggest there is no connection. And that is, so the Atlantean Empire falls, Lumeria and all that shit. Where does that, if it does, unless it's just part of the cyclical cataclysm, you know, model that our world is based on, is like, where does that factor into Tartaria? You know, it might not be called Tartaria back in the day. That's just obviously the common name for it. And
yeah,
to be fair, I do preface this by saying I've seen a lot of videos on it. A lot of it is fucking bullshit, but there is a lot of it that is absolutely makes you scratch your head. Like some people just jump on it just for, you know, just to make YouTube videos out of it or whatever. You know, I see some really stupid stuff, but then you see other stuff, say like say with the buried buildings, and
yeah,
I have a lot of experience, you know, I've seen a lot of these buildings that have windows buried like halfway down, and you ask like a normal person about this, and the, you know, the response is normally, who cares, don't worry about it, you know, whatever.
Yeah,
but there's no logical way to explain that. You don't build half a fucking window at ground level, you know what I mean? It just, but in terms of, say, like, have you done much thinking or like looking into Tartaria or the old world at all?
Excuse me. Not really. I'm familiar with the name and some of the verbiage. I would say that, like, you're using a lot of your brain right now, you know, and a lot of people don't want to do that. And that's where the point of contention is for most people, is that it takes a lot of questioning to even want to think about that. And that is not the mode most people are on. Most people, you know, with all due respect, because having been that in that life of being dissociative, all they want to do is take their mind off of existence. And for some of us, that's not enough. We're just not having it, you know? Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's the theory probably is crap, but there's so many elements, like you said, that's like, okay, but explain this. So it's like, I mean, I don't know about that theory specifically, but I will say that I think that it's in line with more of the ancient civilization, you know, kind of side of it, that argument, because, and there's a quick way we could find out, the Vatican could release what it knows.
Imagine that.
Probably send someone to kill me now that I said that, but sorry, that's it was a joke. I'm not important enough. They don't give a shit about me, but they, but you know, that's just another thing. You know, the first, in a lot of history, you see people like burning libraries and, you know, destroying information, and even Rome and its foundation was built on that, was built on selecting who got the information and which information they got. And it's all predicated on something that was, you know, falsehood. So, and that's nothing against Christianity in general, because, you know, early Christianity was a very pure thing. I mean, it's very hermetic in nature and, you know, about natural law and balance. And there was a lot of virtue to be gained from that, and morality. And it's a very beautiful thing. And I'm not demonizing Catholicism at all either. It's the religion of my grandmother. It's dear to my heart. I still have cards, you know, laminated, you know, different saints and stuff that she gave me to protect me. And I look at them very fondly, and I believe in them and their power symbolically too. But I think that we have to examine everything, right? You know, you can't just throw, you have to have some healthy skepticism, but at the same time, it's like, when you stop wanting to ask questions, that should be your sign that you need to ask more questions.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. Couldn't agree more. 100%. I think, like I always say, just like when, like, talking to these, like talking to people about these sort of subjects that, you know, that aren't really there. And it has since, because I say this all the time on the podcast, people are sick of me saying it, but I've been in this conspiracy sort of like mind since 10 or 11 years old. Like, I was really young. It was actually 9/11. Yeah, it's 9/11 that literally kicked off, because my mum, it kicked it off with her. And then obviously, you know, I was sort of like just beside her, just soaking it all in. But in when it comes to like people, you know, people want sports, they want to be entertained. And I do think that the opposite of enlightenment is entertainment. So you can either be enlightened or you can be entertained. And it's clear to me, and you know I know other people might have a different opinion on it, but in terms of like theater, stuff like that, that was, you know, the very first time it was created, maybe when it was first created, you had, say, like the shaman doing, you know, a dance, and then you had, you know, the tribe would chime in. But in terms of like the Western, not Western, but the sort of like more current civilization, I definitely believe it was created just to distract. Like, absolutely.
100%, like, yeah.
I mean, even
it's engineered.
Yeah, because even like the Romans, I think it was the Romans, wouldn't allow their women to become actresses because it was too much of like, say, like a dirty job, to, you know, to paraphrase. So it's like, and people, like, still to this day, now, I haven't spoken about this much on the channel, because obviously I want to be controversial, like challenge opinions and that, but I suppose now it's a little bit safer. But like, when it comes to what happened over the last 3.5 years, like, I warned so many people not to do it. Just please fucking think, use your fucking brain before you go and do something this drastic. But they did it anyway.
And
it's so crazy to me, because some people even said, like, I know it's fucked, like, I know, but motherfucker, I want to go on holiday. And I was just like, like, whoa, man, like, is that how little, you know, your life and your freedom means to you? You know, it's crazy. Crazy.
Yeah, they did the best they could to politicize it. And I don't engage in politics at all. So I've completely opted out. I'll never vote again. I don't, you know, if Trump wins our election next time, that's fine. If someone else wins, it's not going to matter to me. I don't engage in any of it. I don't watch the news. I haven't watched the news in forever. And I just refuse. I will not opt into it. And part of that has to do with my belief in hermetic principle of like your focus determines your reality, and where you put your energy and your thoughts is what's going to create, or it's what's going to come back to you. You're your transmitter receiver, right? So I firmly believe that, but I will say, I'm with you 100%. When they started talking about mandated vaccines, I was like, well, you know, that's going to be a problem because first of all, I have firearms, and first person that comes at me with some weird chemical is definitely getting shot. I say that jokingly, but it's like, no, I don't want this. I work in a place that's, and I won't say their name, but they're, you know, they are regulated by the FDA. Mm-hmm. So I know what it takes to get even the smallest amount of, you know, anything cleared. And this is just for like trial. It takes years and years and years. So, and then when the person who owns the patent, and I forget his name, but he was on an Aubrey Marcus podcast, who owned the patent in this technology that they use, speaks out against it and its general dishonesty and how it was implemented. That should have been a red flag for everyone.
You think so?
They continue to get their boosters and all that. Like, what are you guys doing?
It's when you see them driving on their own and they're wearing like two masks. It's like, fucking hell. Jesus fucking Christ. No saving those people, man. It's, some people are just, you know, whenever I used to hear the phrase, you know, the sort of NPC theory, pre 2020, because I'm super skeptical, but I'm very, very open minded. Like, and I used to say, you know, that is fun, it's funny, you know, it's very insulting, which is sometimes funny if you're insulting other people. But it, you know, I don't believe it. You know, since 2020, I'm coming around to the idea that it could be true, you know, that people are incarnating here, you know, people are not incarnating here in these bodies. Like, they're some just form of, you know, rendering to make our because the way that I look at things, I definitely believe that we're in a simulation where I don't believe it's like some Elon Musk type fucking, you know, big computer in the sky, you know, doing all this shit. But if you think about it from like even like a terrarium theory, like a natural, like a biological simulation, like we would do, you know,
an experiment.
Like that is, I'd say that's almost overwhelmingly very, very possible, you know.
Well, it's not only possible, it's almost certain. If you look into the work of people like Robert Edward Grant and Sacred Geometry, they did a couple things. These types of minds, they've proved the atheists wrong. But at the same time, they've also proved kind of like every religion, every current religion wrong as well. So they, you know, they're kind of in this, and that's my paraphrasing kind of like stupid person's explanation of what they've done. But, you know, I like to draw sacred geometry, for example. It's a hobby of mine, one of the many. And it's when you look into the theory behind it and the history of it, even where it relates to like some of these megalithic structures that are a lot older than they said they were, it's very clear that it is a simulation in a way. And that's what led me kind of to my exploration of things like Hermeticism and the Kybalion, and that, you know, this is basically a dream of God, if you want to think of it like that, is kind of my perspective on it. And in the book, The Alchemist, one of my favorite lines from it is he goes to see a fortune teller and she tells him that dreams are the language of God.
Wow.
And I was in a therapy program at the time, and because I was going through this awakening, and it hit me so hard that they had this big poster outside between the rooms that you could go out and you could write on and like draw and stuff like that. And I wrote it real big across the bottom, you know, dreams are the language of God. And I quoted the book, and it just always stuck with me because it told me that God is speaking to us, through us, and with us all the time. You're interacting. And it's not like a bearded gentleman, you know, who's watching you and mad that you masturbated yesterday. Sorry to be crass, but like, I mean, it's just a thing that's like, it hit me as like, yeah. And also that dreams are not what we think they are.
Mm-hmm.
There were so many aspects to that quote that like left me. And I should have known that based on dreams that I've had in the past that were, you know, that were at minimum paranormal, and that at best they could have been just the wildest thing ever. I guess where I'm going with that is like, I think we are, physics is kind of in line with, is breaking from the materialist aspect. Mm. I think it kind of has to with the, you know, the double slit experiment and things like that. And how they're measuring people's thoughts, that they leave your body, but where do they go? Right. Mm. The energy leaves your body, but where did it go?
Yeah, so
I love all those theories though. I mean, I love them. I think, you know, I think we should ask more questions about them. I think, you know, I don't think I'm necessarily right. I just, there's so many lines of correlation between so many things that like, you know, we could go on for days in theory, but I think they kind of, we're onto something with some of this stuff. I think the world is changing, and I think maybe you feel that too. I think everybody does. It's a lot different than it used to be.
Oh yeah. It's, you know, not to use the very cliche and used up phrase, but it, you know, it is the new world order. It is that, you know, it's been that for, I argue, it's been that since the world fairs, when they tore down, you know, the old structures, and they tore down the old world, what was left of it, and started the new world. And that is, you know, it's super sad, you know, when you think of that, the heritage and the, you know, the cultures, and just this incredible architecture that was lost. And, you know, you can feel now, I don't know about you, now I'd imagine you do, is the energy just feels so, I don't know how to explain it, articulate it properly, but I feel something big is coming. It's,
yes.
I would say very soon. Very fucking soon. it's something's going to happen and it's going to change everything. And I know that's very vague and it's very, you know, but I just don't know what it is. I just have a feeling, you know, and I'm sure everyone in this community has the, you know, a certain feeling like that, you know. Listen, Phil, Philip, this has been brilliant. Thank you so much for your time.
For sure. It's been really fun for me. I like talking to you. I like that I got to chat with you finally. And
yeah, man.
It's been a lot of fun. I appreciate you reaching out and inviting me on, because I, you know, seldom do things like this. And I've always been afraid of my voice, and I appreciate you letting me out, you know, letting me come out to play.
Yeah, man. You got one of them really, really cool. You know, I think everyone's like that about their own voice. I think you got a cool voice. And then I'm like, you know, when you hear it back, you're like, oh, I don't like the sound of my own voice. But you're like, you know, it's just your voice. No one gives a fuck, you know? Do you know what I mean?
Right, yeah. Yeah, I'm learning but you got the cool, you know, from my perspective, my perception, you got the cool accent too. And that's, you know, that especially for people where I'm from, they hear it and they're like, you know, this guy's got his shit together, obviously.
Yeah. No, I could be laying in a dumpster just, you know, just huffing on paint and eating scraps out of a dustbin. But because of my accent, it's very redeeming and it makes me sound posh. No,
it's nice. Yeah,
it's good. It's let the people know where they can find you, just as a little exit, and anything you got in the pipeline, brother.
Yeah, so it's Chasing Mound Builders on YouTube and Instagram is where I'm the most active. I try to do some stuff on Facebook too, but again, I have the 5K at Cahokia coming up. I'm going to try to document a little bit of that. That's barely mound related, I guess, but. I'm going to go see a bunch of stuff. I'm going to see Anderson, Indiana. I'm coming to see Mound State Park there, where they supposedly found like 15 giant skeletons. But my focus is still going to continue to be to go out there and remove all lenses and absorb the energy and just spread as much positivity as I can. And try to help turn that big thing that's coming, like you said, into something really good. Just Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, Chasing Mound Builders. If you're interested in the mounds and ancient civilizations, and I'm a mycology nerd and a sacred geometry nerd, so we can chat about anything. And I have a Discord on my Linktree. Everybody should join the Discord. You know, come chat us up. I would love that.
Yeah, man. I'll gather up all the links anyway and put them all in the description so people can find you easier. But thank you so much for your time, man. I'm gonna go to sleep because it's nearly midnight and I'm super tired.
Oh damn, yeah. I'm sorry. I'm over here gabbing your ear off too.
hey, we're manifesting this together, brother. No complaints.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, man. All right, have a good night, bro.
All right, you too. Thank you again.
Bye, mate.
All right, peace.
Your presence in the morning time, and that's all right. to remind me that in the clouds all the rain let shine, night time and morning, every tomorrow brings sunshine.
But not if it's paid for by a system that is pushing gender labels on children. Politicians pretend to care about the killing of civilians in foreign countries so they can launder more and more money through proxy wars. Ukraine soldiers wearing the same uniform that Nazis wore. If you think the Illuminati isn't part of this all, then you're a fucking idiot and not smart at all. Hey Bill, you seem awfully quiet. How many times you got flying on private jets to Epstein's Island? Have you seen that client list? Let's see if you believe the mainstream science. Once you see the people involved, I doubt you would have taken that deal at all.